All right, Sandy Rios with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, just a few nights ago at Mar-a-Lago, which where a lot of things are happening right now, by the way, the president is there with all of his lieutenants that he's called to help him, whether it's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and all the rest of them, kind of conclaving there. And would you believe, a few nights ago, someone in the lobby outside the main room heard this and captured a bit of it on his phone. Let's listen. All right, that's at Mar-a-Lago just a few nights ago. And the significance of that, how many times have you heard me talk about the J6ers this past in almost 3 years? How many times have you heard me talk about my concern and all of our concerns, try to bring that to you and how you've taken that on yourself? That was the famous produced piece that J6ers, you know, because you listen, are singing from the jails. They sing the national anthem every night at, I believe, 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. They sing it every night. Someone captured that on just the sound of it and superimposed President Trump talking, you know, giving that famous passage over the top of it. So that's what they were playing at Mar-a-Lago. And I want you to know, and by the way, President Trump was the one who initiated it. He's taking his little iPad. He loves music. He loves opera. He loves all kinds of stuff. So he famously sort of DJs songs at these meetings. I know no one has ever been like President Trump. I understand that. And I think the more we learn about him, I don't know, it's just hard not to like him, isn't it? Anyway, he's DJing and he plays this. That's what he plays. And he tells them he's going to pardon the J6ers. He's been saying that publicly, but I just want you to know he was saying that at Mar-a-Lago too. And so I'm thrilled. I am so happy. I am so happy for them. I'm just waiting to see how it all unfolds. Well, things are complicated. You knew they would be, right? President Trump is making his appointments, and since I last talked to you in a timely fashion, we were in Washington, D.C. all last week, so I have a lot of things to tell you. But since President Trump has been making his appointments known, well, there are people who are just going into a rage. And today, and maybe the next two podcasts, we're going to discuss, meaning Bruce and I, are going to discuss at least two of these most controversial. I don't know, it's hard to choose two. But we're going to talk about Matt Gaetz and we're going to talk about Pete Hegseth, the one Secretary of Defense, and Matt Gaetz, of course, nominated for Attorney General. I'm sure this is confusing, and some of you may not know what you think either, and I'm not going to tell you what to think. We will tell you what our thoughts are on it and give you more information to help you come to a conclusion, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I have a couple of pieces of information. In fact, I'm going to bring Bruce on early just for a second. Sweetheart, I've not shown you this, but I'm going to get this. This is on President Trump's plane. Do you see that? Okay, you want to describe what you're seeing?
It's the president and Elon Musk and Don Jr. and RFK and Speaker Johnson having a luxurious meal in the plane of McDonald's.
And RFK Jr. is he's like choking on
yeah,
his mouth.
RFK Jr. doesn't look too thrilled with eating this. Don Jr. looks very happy. He's holding up a container of French fries.
Yeah, and they're all smiling just real mischievously. Yeah. It's really funny. Yeah. So, and have you seen, Bruce, that Trump, you know how President Trump puts his arms up and does this dance?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen all the football players imitating that?
Yes.
I saw
them. You're starting to see it both in the pros and in college. When people score touchdowns, they're doing the Donald Trump dance in the end zone.
You know what? Silliness, but heaven knows our nation needs to laugh. We need to laugh. We have gone too long without a sense of humor. And I'm hoping that even the left will find some way to laugh. This, in fact, I should just quickly, this is real interesting. And we are going to get into Matt and to Pete Hegseth in just a second. But this was a surprise. This came into my inbox this morning. This is MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski and Joe. Morning, Joe. This is what they have just announced. Clip 3.
Over the past week, Joe and I have heard from so many people, from political leaders to regular citizens, deeply dismayed by several of President-elect Trump's cabinet selections, and they are scared. Last Thursday, we expressed our own concerns on this broadcast and even said we would appreciate the opportunity to speak with the president-elect himself. On Friday, we were given the opportunity to do just that. Joe and I went to Mar-a-Lago to meet personally with President-elect Trump. It was the first time we have seen him in 7 years.
Now, we talked about a lot of issues, including abortion, mass deportation, threats of political retribution against political opponents and media outlets. We talked about that a good bit. And it's going to come as no surprise to anybody who watches this show, has watched it over the past year or over the past decade, that we didn't see eye to eye on a lot of issues, and we told him so.
What we did agree on was to restart communications. My father often spoke with world leaders with whom he and the United States profoundly disagreed. That's a task shared by reporters and commentators alike. We had not spoken to President Trump since March of 2020, other than a personal call Joe made to Trump on the morning after the attempt on his life in Butler, Pennsylvania. In this meeting, President Trump was cheerful, he was upbeat, he seemed interested in finding common ground with Democrats on some of the most divisive issues. And for
all right, I'm going to interrupt. It goes on and on. But the point is, I mean, can you believe Morning Joe and Mika Brzezinski now went to Mar-a-Lago to meet with President Trump? I think that's amazing. Now, the only thing that concerns me is I hope President Trump is not too, you know, sympathetic to their cause. But really, I think this should be a great sign to all of us. We need peace in our country. We need deep, deep change. We need spiritual renewal. We have just come through. We heard Ted Cruz's father, Rafael, preaching yesterday morning, and he talked about how the awakenings in this country brought about spiritual awakenings, awakenings to God himself, and followed by a political awakening. He talked about the Revolutionary War came after the First Great Awakening. And then he talked about how the Civil War came after the Second Great Awakening. And so he was just saying, we just had a political awakening. Now we must have a spiritual awakening, because our founders said that our system of government was not suitable for any other people than people whose lives were guided by religion and morality. Religion and morality, they said it all the time. Washington said it. John Adams said it. Because we are given such freedom that we have to use self-control. If people self-control, self-censor, you know, govern their own lives, then a system of freedom like this works. And so that's not the reason to have a renewal or revival. That's because we all need that in our lives, regardless of government. But that's what makes this government work. And so we just pray for revival. I'll be talking about that to you. I think I do talk, I hope, that I say it enough to you, that I just challenge you to personally seek holiness in your own life and your own mind and heart and your families. And then now is the time, if ever there were to be bold about our faith. We need to tell as many people, persuade, know what you're talking about. Persuade people. Let's bring people into the kingdom with reason, with the power of the Holy Spirit, and let's see if we can have, we don't have to have some, you know, a website set up or any kind of an organized effort. Just do what God's called you to do. Be salt and light. Tell people about Jesus as natural as going to get your morning coffee. And so, and let's just see what God does. And so I have lots to say. You can tell that, can't you? I think that's everything. No, I have one other thing I want. This is a big announcement today, and it's important. This was tweeted by Tom Fitton just either last night or early this morning. And he says, President Trump is confirming that he is prepared to declare a national emergency and use military assets to reverse the Biden invasion. So that's huge. He's willing to declare a national emergency and start deporting the people that have invaded our country. I think that's going to be very controversial, but I don't think to the people, when you think about Venezuelan games, when you think of what we're estimating is 250,000 Chinese military within our bounds, when we have gangs and criminals who have been killing and raping our women and young boys, then it's time for something drastic. So personally, I'm up front endorsing this, but I wanted you to know the president has announced that he, yes, indeed. And he actually retweeted Tom's tweet saying, yes, that's exactly what he's going to do, or he's willing to do. Let's just say it that way. Well, all right. Two of the most controversial appointees are Matt Gaetz and Pete Hegseth. Matt Gaetz for Attorney General, Pete for Secretary of Defense. And we're going to talk about them in just a minute. But first, you know, this is Sandy Reels 24/7. And I know that the audience is growing, and I'm so grateful. I'm really grateful. Man, I take this as a sacred trust. I always have. I've always understood from the time that God called me to do radio that I had a sacred trust. It wasn't time for me to beat my chest, brag, boast, or talk about anything just to promote God's principles and truth. And sometimes, you know, I talk about truth and I don't talk about God, because you don't have to mention him or say a poem and a verse every time you talk about truth. God is a God of all truth. He's everywhere and in everything. So that's the way I approach the news with you and my conversations with you. Everything. God is in everything, everything. It's in him that we live and move and have our being. He's in politics. He's in sports. He's in the studio right now. He's in marriage. He's everywhere. He's in what you watch on television. He's in what car you drive. He's in how you use your time. He's everywhere. And so when we talk about these things, it just goes without saying that God is involved. So the decisions that have to be made on Capitol Hill are don't tell me they don't concern him. I just reread a couple of days ago in Luke about how he knows the numbers of hair on our head. Of how the sparrow, he knows each sparrow that falls. Each bird, each tiny bird that falls, God is aware. So you think he's not aware of what's happening with us politically, what we are concerned about, whether it's energy or grocery prices? You bet he is. And so it's with that we approach the news. All right, you can find me at sandyreels.com, and you can listen to the podcast there. You can also find it on all the other podcast platforms, and certainly our home base, which is AmericanFamilyRadio.net, AFR.net. You can find me on the social media platforms, but Twitter, I think, is the most powerful right now. Just telling you, even if you're not, I never said this before because I didn't think that necessarily regular people would benefit from Twitter, because it's been kind of a news source for those of us that are newsy and trying to deliver. But I'm telling you, all of you, that is a platform for free speech, and that'll get your engines going, and you're going to know what's true and what isn't. So my Twitter handle, as they call it, is @SandyReelsTweet, @SandyReelsTweet. And I recommend that you sign up for Twitter and use it. And please follow me on @SandyReelsTweet, and you'll hear additional things that I don't get to on this show. Well, a new Danish study shows that a year after aborting, women exhibited a 50% higher likelihood of first-time psychiatric treatment and an 87% higher likelihood of personality and behavioral disorders. How is this women's health care? The trauma of ending your own flesh and blood is the opposite of women's health care. Here's what women's health care looks like at Preborn's network clinics. Women are welcomed with open arms and feel loved from the moment they walk into the door. Then they're introduced to their baby on ultrasound and offered life-affirming choices. When they choose life, they are offered assistance for up to 2 years, including maternity clothes, diapers, counseling, and so much more. Preborn treats the woman, the whole woman, body, mind, and soul, and the baby growing inside of her. If you're looking for the greatest investment for your year-end write-offs, choose Preborn. Donating is simple. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right. So paper and pencil, so you can talk with your neighbors after you listen to the podcast. Here we go. Bruce and I talking about these controversial nominees and just what maybe we should know about both of them, Matt Gaetz and Pete Hegseth, on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something. All right, well, one of the most controversial picks that the president has made so far is Congressman Matt Gaetz. And I'm sure that most of you are certainly know who he is. He has been controversial for a reason. And I'm going to remind you of that reason. And I'm going to start out with a clip. It's about almost 5 minutes long, so just be prepared for that. But I'm going to give you an idea of why Matt Gaetz is so unpopular with the deep state. Let's listen.
The American people need to understand what just happened. My Democrat colleague just asked the director of the FBI whether or not they are buying information about our fellow Americans. And the answer is, well, we'll just have to get back to you on that. It sounds really complicated. But I have other questions. I'm sitting here with my father. I will make certain that between the man sitting next to me and every person he knows and my ability to forever hold a grudge, that you will regret not following my direction. I am sitting here waiting for the call with my father. Sounds like a shakedown, doesn't it, Director?
I'm not going to get into commenting on that.
You seem deeply uncurious about it, don't you? Almost suspiciously uncurious. Are you protecting the Bidens?
Absolutely not. The FBI does not and has no interest in protecting anyone politically.
You won't answer the question about whether or not that's a shakedown, and everybody knows why you won't answer it. Because to the millions of people who will see this, they know it is. And your inability to acknowledge that is deeply revealing about you. But let's go from the uncurious to the downright nosy. How many illegal FISA queries have occurred under your leadership of the FBI?
Well, there are reports that have come out with different numbers about compliance incidents.
More than a million illegal ones? Because that's what the Inspector General said. The Inspector General said that in the 3.4 million of these queries, more than a million were in error. Do you have any basis to disagree with that assessment by the Inspector General?
I'm not sure. Actually, that's a correct characterization of the Inspector General's findings on
well,
that.
Well, the Internet will remind you of that in moments. But let's now go to what the court said. The court said it was over 200,000 that have occurred on your watch. Do you have any basis to disagree with that assessment?
Again, I don't have the numbers as I sit here right now. What I can
seems like
you,
a number you should know. How many times the FBI is breaking the law under your watch, especially if it's like over a million, to not know that number? And I'm worried about your veracity on the subject as well. Play the video.
Letters for are investigation you going to the FISA of court? The Capitol. I don't believe FISA is remotely implicated in our investigation.
So there, Senator Lee's asking you whether or not FISA was in any way involved in your January 6th investigation, and you say no. Was that truthful?
I said that I did not believe it was.
Okay, so now let's pull up what the court said, which was something a little different than what you said. So here, the government has reported additional significant violations of the querying standard, including several relating to the January 6, 2021 breach of the Capitol. So I guess the question, Director Wray, is did you not know when you were answering these questions that the FBI was engaging in these illegal searches, or did you perjure yourself to Senator Lee?
I certainly didn't perjure myself. At the time that I testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I didn't have that piece of information. I will add...
Well, that was a court order. You didn't have that piece of information because the court hadn't yet rendered a judgment. Did you not know when you gave the untruthful answer before Senator Lee that this was going on?
It was a truthful answer. I did not believe FISA had been involved in the January 6th.
But it was. So you didn't... The answer is the FBI has broken so bad that people can go and engage in queries that when you come before the Congress to answer questions, you're like blissfully ignorant. You're blissfully ignorant as to the unlawful queries. You're blissfully ignorant as to the Biden shakedown regime. And it just seems like it gets into a kind of a creepy place as well. Go to our next image on what the court said. Like, just so the American people realize, the court has smacked you down, alleging or ruling FBI personnel apparently conducted queries for improper personal reasons. People were looking themselves up. They were looking their ex-lovers up. Who has been held accountable or fired as a consequence of the FBI using the FISA process as their, like, creepy personal snoop machine?
There have been instances in which individuals have had disciplinary action and
Name
who are
them.
No longer with it. I can't get into it here, but we can follow back up
but
with
don't you. See, yeah. Don't you see that that's kind of the thing, Director Wray, that you preside over the FBI that has the lowest level of trust in the FBI's history? People trusted the FBI more when J. Edgar Hoover was running the place than when you are. And the reason is because you don't give straight answers. You give answers that later a court deems aren't true. And then at the end of the day, you won't criticize an obvious shakedown when it's directly in front of us. And it appears as though you're whitewashing the conduct of corrupt people.
Respectfully, Congressman, in your home state of Florida, the number of people applying to come work for us and devote their lives working for us is up over 100%.
We're deeply proud of them, and they deserve better than you.
All right. Do you have an idea now why Matt Gaetz, that was the FBI director, Chris Wray, and Gaetz covered a lot of territory. He first starts out by reminding him of what Hunter Biden promised his dad. We have it on tape that, you know, I'm sitting here next to my dad. He's shaking down a Chinese billionaire. And we know that after that shakedown call, they received, I don't know how many million dollars, but they did. It worked, you know. And he's asking the director, and you're deeply uncurious about this, Director Wray. And there were a lot of other interrogations by Matt. He interrogated Merrick Garland, the attorney general. I'm going to play that in just a little bit. And he also went after Adam Schiff. He's gone after a lot of people, and they are really mad at him. So I found he also was, at least they give to him the honor of having brought down Kevin McCarthy. I actually think that's true. I remember there was a scene, we covered that so in such detail when it happened, when the Freedom Caucus led the charge to get Kevin McCarthy out. And I have maintained to you ever since that that was a great thing, because Kevin is not, President Trump's my Kevin is not what he seems to be. He's undermined conservatives over and over and over again, undermined this country. He really was a very duplicitous, like his predecessor, Paul Ryan, same things. These guys are just not straight up. And Matt is, I want you to hear, when I play another clip in a second, his facility with the law. He is very, very smart. And he never gets off. He knows what he's talking about. He's disciplined. He may be funny and he may have an unusual approach, but he's not, there's nothing dumb about him. The reason I believe for all of this objection is that people are afraid. And I'll go into that a little bit. First of all, you're hearing allegations against Matt, and I should talk about that for a second, because I know some of you are very worried about his the moral charges against him. So you certainly deserve to know what's true and what isn't. Now, Molly Hemingway, who I really trust, I love Molly personally, and you think we've all been the beneficiary for great reporting. So she's really tackled this issue. The whole notion of this ethics committee investigating Matt in the House came about after he took down Kevin McCarthy. And that came about from an investigation by the Justice Department that fell flat. It was such a bad case that they dropped the charges. So I'm going to tell you what those things are in a second. And now there's pressure on Mike Johnson and on that ethics committee to make what happened with Matt, what the details are, public. Because we need to know, right? We need to know what's coming. Now, I want to remind you that you wouldn't know, but I may have mentioned this. The Ethics Committee in the House has been used now for the last several years as a weapon. There should be an Ethics Committee. Goodness, Bruce used to work for, you know, he was one of the policemen, sort of, the FBI investigators into bad actors in the FBI. That was one of his jobs. And there needs to be that kind of thing. But what's happened with this Ethics Committee in the House is that certainly under the Democrats, and so you'll see Republicans have their hands dirty on this too, it's a way to take down fellow members that you don't like or, you know, not playing the game, kind of coloring outside the box. I'll give you an example. Remember Devin Nunes? I'll never forget the day he came out to that microphone in front of the White House and with a stunned look on his face and told us that what he was saying in these documents he just spent hours reading in the basement from a whistleblower, he found out about this, that this whole business of Russian collusion was a hoax ginned up by the deep state, by Hillary Clinton. And he starts telling that. He's going everywhere. And he's like not even knowing all that he knows now. And what happened? Well, the Ethics Committee in the House brought charges against Devin Nunes. He had to step down. He was the chairman of the Intelligence Committee in the House at the time. He had to step down for about a year, and guess who took his place? Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff is the one that ran the game then, and we all know, well, some of you may not know, but he's a chronic liar. You're going to see him again because he just got elected to the Senate, and we'll be seeing again those very large eyes with those convincing lies. He's an amazing, amazing guy. So Adam Schiff, they put Devin Nunes in the back in a back seat, and he couldn't talk. He couldn't talk for a year, and Adam Schiff was the one then that led that all the Russian collusion garbage. So what I'm trying to explain to you is that the Ethics Committee is used as a hammer now to punish fellow members who will not toe the line. So Gates is certainly one of those members, and the Republicans have been as upset about him as have been, well, some of them love him. You should hear the remarks they're making. They love him. Anna Paulina Luna says she is so excited, and so are so many others. I could read lots of quotes for you. But there are other detractors, and so you find yourself saying, well, I wonder why. Why wouldn't they must know then, these fellow House members, how horrible Matt is, and that's why they're objecting. Well, I'm going to give you another little snapshot of the kind of thing that Matt does, because he's talking to a reporter walking down the halls of Congress. And he is exposing, now these are Republicans he's exposing, and let's listen in on this little conversation. This is clip one.
Congressman Gates offered to take us on a tour.
So one of the committees where people have a lot of information is the Appropriations Committee, because they can view almost any vector of government funding. And so, you know, this is Mr. Rutherford's office. He's on the Ethics Committee and the Appropriations Committee. 152 stock trades. Stocks go through the roof. And, you know, actually bought Raytheon stock the day that Russia invaded Ukraine.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if every American could make money off of war.
Yeah, setting aside the whole shame and ethics questions. How many more on our hit list here?
There are a few more. I wish there were fewer on the hit list. I wish we could only stop at one or two offices, but as it turns out, energy is a sector that sees a lot of congressional stock trading.
Sure.
And we have members who are on the Energy Subcommittee of Appropriations, like Michael Guest, chairman of the Ethics Committee, and he's traded somewhere between tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars in energy stocks. He's been buying online gaming stocks and just making a killing on them. So you would think that the people that were on the Ethics Committee would be your best allies in this fight, but indeed they're some of the most prolific traders. And not only trading, but in the case of Mr. Guest, trading in an area where he has access to energy information more so than almost any other American.
And no indication that he wants to maybe slow down, pump the brakes, recognize that there might be some appearance of impropriety here?
It seems as though the pace is only accelerating.
All right.
All right, so that's just two. You get the picture here? I mean, I've been telling you for a long time, especially the Senate is so corrupted. I've tried to expose some of it myself, but Matt's there, and he's willing. He's got the guts to speak up. So does Senator Lee now and others. Finally, they're finding their voices, and we're going to learn a lot, I think. So who are the complainers in the Senate against Matt Gaetz's appointment? Who are the loudest? I'll tell you, the first person to come out was John Cornyn. I wish I had the clip, but he was furious. There's no way he's going to pass through the Senate procedure. There's no way they're going to confirm him. And then, of course, we've got McConnell at a private event. This is really interesting. I wish I had his exact words. Maybe I do. Yeah, here it is. According to Jane Meyer, he said in an insider meeting or an event, this is the quote from Jane Meyer, "There will be no recess appointments," Senator Mitch McConnell said tonight at a Washington gathering. Well, now that tweet is gone. You can't find it on the internet, but I got it. And so there you go. So they're worried about this. Now, why would they be so worried? Why would they be so worried? Well, I maintain that the reason they're so worried is because they've been doing stuff and they're afraid they'll be exposed. I don't know that for a fact about John Cornyn. I don't know that for a fact. Well, kind of some pretty good indication about McConnell, who's gotten very, very wealthy. Very, 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 very wealthy. How did that happen? And how about those lieutenants like John Thune who stand behind Mitch McConnell? In fact, I want to take a little sidetrack because I want to tell you something important. You all may remember I told you about going to the White House and meeting with President Trump in probably 2017 or 18. And I went with other friends of mine. There were probably 10 of us. And we sat at a table and all of President Trump's, Kellyanne Conway, all of the top lieutenants were in that room. And at that table, at the end of the table, was someone who worked for President Trump at the time. I'll just tell you, his name was Johnny DiStefano. And so we were trying to alert President, this is all on record now, it was in the New York Times. It was a lie what they told, but they talked about the meeting. So we were trying to get information to President Trump about people working for him who were undermining him. The list was long, and we tried to get it to him before, but it was always intercepted. You may recall that Reince Priebus, a Republican, was asked to be chief of staff for President Trump. President Trump was trying to be gracious after his win and include the never-Trumper wing, not knowing how vicious they were. So Reince Priebus appoints Johnny DiStefano to be in charge of personnel and hiring. So what happened? I would tell you that all the conservatives who applied for jobs with the Trump White House in 2016, those resumes, well, they went in the trash. And the people that got nominated were people that hated Trump, did not want to work for him. They wanted to undermine him. And Johnny made sure that happened. So we're sitting in this room. I'll just tell you, we were sitting in this room, and we actually said, well, he said, who are you talking about? And someone spoke up and said, well, there's one that's right in this room. And you can imagine how tense it got in that room. And then fellow conservative with me, fellow person that I work with, said, it's right there at the end of the table. His name is Johnny DiStefano. Well, Johnny burst out in anger. He jumped up from the table. He was so upset. I can't imagine why. Well, he was 2 weeks later, he was gone from the White House. And I don't know if I said to you that Johnny worked for Boehner, who hates Trump. Boehner, who was not a conservative. Boehner, who did so much damage, covered up Benghazi. I could go on and on. So now, fast forward. What year is this? 2024. And who just won the race to be the leader of the Senate for the Republicans? And now, because they'll be the majority, he'll be the leader of the Senate. What was a guy named John Thune from South Dakota, Mr. Senator Thune, who always stands behind McConnell as one of his lieutenants, one of McConnell's handpicked candidates, along with John Cornyn. John Thune actually prevailed over Rick Scott, who we were hoping would get that role. And guess who is the one of the chief staffers for John Thune? Anybody want to guess? Well, it's Johnny DiStefano, who has now gravitated to that office, and John Thune is going to be the majority leader in the Senate. So I'm just telling you, that's how things are. That's how messy they are. So so you've already heard how Matt, outs people, and so he's not very popular. And so so now you've got this John Rutherford, who he outed as doing a lot of insider trading. And so John is on the ethics committee, and so are others. So what is it that they have on Matt Gaetz? Well, you've probably heard it's like, I think they've called it sex trafficking, sex with an underage girl. And I was just starting to tell you that Molly Hemingway has really covered this thoroughly. And I would commend, she's done two articles on it, but I'll commend this one to you. In fact, we'll put this on our social media so you can find it. It's House Probe into Matt Gaetz Relies on Witnesses DOJ Found Lacked Credibility. And so let me just tell you where Matt is now. I don't know Matt personally, and I'm sure he's not a Sunday school teacher. I've interviewed him several times. He was a very good-looking guy. He has been since he got in. His hair is always perfect. And I think he was quite a partier, and he dated a lot of women. I think that's an established fact. But whether he was a sex trafficker, having sex with underage women and doing drugs, that's the part that they're accusing him of. So what's behind that? So I want to just borrow from Molly's words here. She says the last 8 years at the Department of Justice have been a disaster for the rule of law. The sprawling intelligence and law enforcement agency ran the Russian collusion hoax, hamstringing President Donald Trump during his entire first term in office. Moving ahead, instead of rooting out the corruption at the department, most of permanent D.C. did absolutely nothing in response. Yet somehow the chattering class was shocked when Trump nominated loyal foot soldier Representative Matt Gaetz to be the attorney general in Trump's second term and to fix DOJ. And of course, I've just played a clip to show you how effective he is. I'm going to play another one in a second. So there is a House Ethics Committee report. And now because he has, and I'm going to talk about this in a second, resigned from Congress. And I'll explain that. I'm sure you've heard that, and you've heard various allegations as to why that is. The Health Ethics Committee, now that report is going away. So some are accusing Matt of stepping down because of that. But here's the deal. Back to Molly's words. That report comes years after DOJ dropped its investigation into the same claims on the grounds that two central witnesses had serious credibility issues. Yet these are the same two central witnesses the House Ethics Committee has relied on for its critical report of Gaetz. The same report is that it is leaking to compliant reporters as part of a coordinated effort to thwart his nomination as the next attorney general. Now, let me just give you an idea. The guy that's in prison who's doing these accusations is a guy named Joel Greenberg. He was a former Seminole County tax collector. And he's currently serving 11 years in prison for falsely accusing local political opponent Brian Beauty of having sex with a minor, similar to the same claim he made against Gaetz. He also later attempted to frame his own attorney with pornographic images of children. One New York Times write-up of Greenberg was headlined, "Like the Tiger King Got Elected Tax Collector." So the DOJ, because the allegations were so weak, dropped the charges in 2022. So now the House Ethics Committee has picked it up. And I told you that was in response to Gaetz taking down McCarthy. That's what we're pretty sure happened. So there's more about that Greenberg thing. I'll just say that Greenberg himself was involved in sex trafficking and accused Matt Gaetz of doing what he was actually convicted for. So I'll just leave it at that. You can read more about that, actually, if you'd like to, at House Probe into Matt Gaetz Relies on Witnesses DOJ Found Lacked Credibility, and that is in The Federalist. So now, does that mean Matt as a Sunday school teacher? Does not mean that. But my position on this, for what it's worth, is that we are in a war. And our politicians are not our spiritual leaders. I wish they were. I don't even think they were during the Revolution with all the stuff I've read about some of these men. No, I'm not talking about George Washington. They stellar character. Abraham Lincoln, the same thing. But they weren't all that way. So I think you have to understand that our church and our faith in Christ and the leaders in the church are chosen with a different grid. So I know Matt's not a perfect guy, but let me ask you this. If you go to war, who do you want, General Patton or your Sunday school teacher? I mean, Matt is like a General Patton for coming after the Justice Department. And I personally think that He's a great, he doesn't owe anybody anything. He's not on the inside. And that's a blessing, trust me. In Washington, it is, it has to be cleaned out. Even some of the good people are just so attached to government money that they do bad things. And so there's going to be a wrecking crew taken to them. And I think that's a good thing. Now, here's the thing. Matt Gaetz has resigned from Congress. Speaker Johnson mentioned that. And they are saying because he doesn't want this ethics allegation to come out. Well, it's already out. I don't think it's going to be. There's not going to be any too much more. There'll be details than what I've just told you. But the truth is that Florida state law requires a vacancy to be filled within 8 weeks of someone stepping down. So Matt, according to what he told Governor DeSantis, was stepping down so that Florida has time to reelect someone else that can come in and sit in that, get ready to go on the January 3rd when the new Congress is convened. And that's the idea behind it. So the same thing is happening with Mike Waltz. As I understand it, he's going to resign. Same thing, so someone can fill up because he's also going to be working with the Trump administration. So that's my understanding of how that's coming down. Now, we're going to stop and take a break for a second. And when we come back, I know Bruce has some thoughts about this because of his expertise as a former FBI agent, his expert with FISA, whatever he wants to comment on. We'll have him do that in just a second. And also, I have some really important information for you that you might not have heard anywhere about this whole business of recess appointments. So stay tuned. And when we come back, also, I will play another clip of, I'm going to come back with a clip of Matt taking on Merrick Garland just for your entertaining, just to entertain you today slightly on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All of you who listen to this podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, know about Freeborn. They provide ultrasound for moms who find themselves pregnant and are in crisis. They're not married. It's not their husband. It's just all kind of, so many children, they worry economically whether they can afford it. There are a lot of reasons why women consider abortion, but most of the time, and I mean over half the time, maybe as much as 60%, of women decide to keep their babies when they see these 40 ultrasound pictures of the baby moving around, sucking its thumb. It's just, it's a miracle. I remember that miracle when I was carrying my son and found out he was a boy. So that's what Preborn does. And if you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place an ultrasound machine in a needy women's center, saving countless babies for years to come. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Attorney General, you've told us that it's a dangerous conspiracy theory to allege that the Department of Justice is communicating with these state and local prosecutions against Trump. You can clear it all up for us right now. Will the Department of Justice provide to the committee all documents, all correspondence between the department and Alvin Bragg's office and Fannie Willis's office and Letitia James's office?
The offices you're referring to are independent offices of state.
I get that. State. The question is whether or not you will provide all of your documents and correspondence. That's the question. I don't need a history lesson.
Well, I'm going to say again, we do not control those offices. They make their own
decisions. The question is whether
decisions.
You communicate with them, not whether you control them. Do you communicate with them, and will you provide those communications?
You make a request, we'll refer it to our Office of Legislative Affairs.
But see, here's the thing. You come in here and you lodge this attack that it's a conspiracy theory that there is coordinated lawfare against Trump. And then when we say, fine, just give us the documents, give us the correspondence, and then if it's a conspiracy theory, that will be evident. But when you say, well, we'll take your request, and then we'll sort of work it through the DOJ's accommodation process, then you're actually advancing the very dangerous conspiracy theory that you're concerned about. Now, you were a judge, once nominated to the highest court in our country. When you were a judge, I'm just curious, did you ever make political donations to partisan candidates?
No.
No, and you didn't because that would create the potential appearance of impropriety.
I didn't because there's a federal rule barring federal judges from making contributions.
Right, but under that same theory of attacks on the judicial process, like, shouldn't someone be owed, like, a jury of their peers and a judge that's non-biased rather than getting a judge from your political opponent's donor file?
I'm well aware that you're not asking a hypothetical. You're asking me to comment on a jury verdict in another jurisdiction which has to be respected. I won't comment on it. That case is still ongoing. The defendant
Mr. Attorney General, I hadn't asked you about the verdict yet. We were getting there. I was talking about the judge. And so let me ask you this question about your time as a judge. Was there ever a time when you were a judge when you had a family member who was personally profiting off of the notoriety of a case that was before your court?
Look, I'm going to say again, it's very clear you're asking me to comment on a case in another jurisdiction.
Hold on, Mr. Attorney General. Did you ever have a family member profit off of the notoriety of any case that you sat over?
I'm going to say again, you're asking
yes or no?
You're asking me to comment on a case currently.
Well, it seems you're connecting the dots, Mr. Attorney General. I'm just asking you as to a general principle, but you are aware that Judge Mershon's daughter was profiting off of this prosecution. You are aware that that creates the appearance of impropriety. You know the very reason there's a federal rule against judges giving donations is because it is the very attack on the judicial process that we're concerned about.
I'm sorry, I don't agree with anything you just said, but I'm not going to comment on it.
Okay,
on
so you won't comment on it, Mr. Court. Attorney General, but you had no problem dispatching Matthew Colangelo. Who's Matthew Colangelo?
That is false. I did not dispatch Matthew Colangelo.
Matthew Colangelo became the Assistant Attorney General at the very beginning of the Biden administration. Without having been Senate confirmed, goes and gets the senior role at the DOJ, and then after, I believe it's Gupta replaces Colangelo, Colangelo makes this remarkable downstream career journey from the U.S. Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., and then pops up in Alvin Bragg's office to go get Trump. And you're saying that's just a career choice that was made that has nothing to do with the lawfare coordinated
I'm
by the
I'm saying it's false. I did not dispatch Mr. Colangelo anywhere.
Well, do you know how he ended up there?
I assume he spoke, he applied for a job there and got the job.
But see, you know what?
I had nothing to do with it.
Well, you might not have had anything to do with it, but we've got this contemporaneous evidence in Mr. Pomerantz's book. So Pomerantz writes this book, which I'm sure you're aware of, where he says, we put together the legal eagles to get Trump. We got all these folks together, and we assembled them for that purpose. And so when we on the Judiciary Committee think about attacks on the judicial process, our concern is that the facts and the law aren't being followed. A target is acquired, here, Trump, and then you assemble the legal talent from DOJ, Mr. Pomerantz, and you bring everybody in to get him. And meanwhile, the judge is making money on it. The judge's family's making money on it for stuff that you yourself wouldn't do. You know, no one's going to buy this. No one's going to believe it. It's going to create great disruption. And I am saddened by it because, like you, I have given my life to the law. I care deeply about the law. And I think that the lawfare we've seen against President Trump will do great damage well beyond our time in public service.
All right, so that's Matt Gaetz. Sandy Rios back with you. That's Matt Gaetz, of course, taking on Merrick Garland, the current Attorney General of the United States. And Matt has now been appointed to take his seat. You think anybody in justice is upset about that? We've been reading. They're quaking in their boots, anything to destroy Matt Gaetz. So that's why we're taking, you know, his story and his situation on. And that little clip, he's talking about Judge Juan Merchant, who really did some very unusual rulings. He was not appointed to the case in the usual way. He is not even careful about how he feels about President Trump. And his daughter, what he's speaking about is Lauren Merchant, is a fundraiser for Democratic entities. She has raised on the backs of her dad's rulings. And this news story, she's raised millions. And that's what Matt was talking about. Somebody dared to say the quiet part out loud. And you heard the exchange. I've asked Bruce to join me because I'm sure he has a lot of thoughts about what we've been talking about. So thanks, honey, for a former FBI agent, former prosecutor. What are your thoughts?
Well, that clip that you just played of Gaetz interrogating the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, is an encapsulation of why the left is absolutely freaking out over Matt Gaetz potentially becoming the next Attorney General. You can see, first off, Matt knows the workings of government. And, you know, it's amazing when you watch Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, and Merrick Garland, the present AG, testify, how carefully they craft their words and how conveniently ignorant they are when they appear before these committees. Is that not the ultimate in hubris? Because of all people in the government that should be totally transparent, it should be the director of the FBI, the world's leading investigative agency, and the Attorney General of the United States, the nation held to have the highest standard of truthfulness and justice. And in fact, when people go up and testify that have those kind of positions, they not only have a duty to answer the question that's asked, but they have a duty to fill in the blanks in case the question doesn't cover everything. And if there's ever been two people that subverted that that requirement, it's Christopher Wray and Merrick Garland. And you can see how when let me go to this ethics investigation that Sandy spoke about. That really is the thing that the left is holding on to as trying to quiet down Matt Gaetz. And let's put this in perspective. This whole situation was investigated back in 2020. And guess who did the investigation? The FBI and the Department of Justice, led by the two men you just heard obfuscating.
Oh, no, surely not, honey.
No.
They must be. They surely recused themselves from that, right?
Well, let me put it this way, though. If there had been sufficient evidence to prove something against Matt Gaetz, you think they would not have indicted him?
Yes, they would have.
And they didn't indict him. And I'll guarantee it wasn't because they didn't want to. It was because the case was not there. And so that, and you know, you have to understand, in a criminal case, proof is required beyond a reasonable doubt. Now you go to this ethics committee. Well, their proof doesn't have to be anywhere near proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's easy to start tarring and feathering somebody by innuendo.
And leaking it to the press.
And leaking it to the press. Mm-hmm. And it's character assassination. So I say to these people, Garland and Ray, either lay your cards on the table or shut up.
You know, it's a lot like President Trump's accusations. There's no doubt he was a billionaire playboy. He was with a lot of beautiful women. And I always ask the men in the audience listening to me, if you weren't a believer in Christ and you were a billionaire who looked like Donald Trump when he was a young man, how would you have conducted yourself? I'm not saying it's right, but we cannot hold people who don't know Jesus to the same standard as us. We have a different standard. So I think Matt would fall in that category somewhat. He's a lesser, of course, in terms of his scope and his wealth. But he is a very good-looking guy who probably, you know, used his looks to do a lot of things. But he is, from all accounts, for what it's worth, very happily married now. And so, I want to make sure you don't think we're saying he's perfect. We're saying that this stuff, like the whole allegation of President Trump, you know, having a prostitute in Russia, urinating on the bed, oh, it's just the most ridiculous stuff. That's what we're talking about. This is what it seems to be, these allegations against Matt.
And, you know, I think the voters spoke 2 weeks ago, and they said, we're tired of these agencies being used to come after people with false allegations. And so now you have the tables have been turned, and the people that were responsible for the Russia hoax, Matt Gaetz's case, you know, we can go on and on. Those people are now in danger of being exposed.
Yeah.
And so. Someone like Matt Gaetz knows where to go to get the bodies. He understands the FBI. He understands the Department of Justice. And they're not going to, the career people that are there are not going to be able to snowball him that as to what evidence is in their files. Because what I've been worried about, and this, I hate saying this, but I've been worried about what have the shredders been doing at the FBI and the Attorney General's office? How have they been used since the election?
Well, in the Department of Defense, which we'll get to in a little bit, yeah.
I mean, and don't think people aren't running scared. I heard our favorite ex-FBI agent Andrew McCabe talking the other day, and he's still out there denying that he did anything wrong or that the FBI did anything wrong in going after President Trump through the Russiagate hoax. And we all know through evidence that's been presented since that he's a liar. We know that Peter Strzok is a liar, and I don't use that term lightly. But we know they lied before Congress and that they have covered up what they did to try to bring down what was essentially a coup against President Trump when he was elected back in 2016. And don't think that those people are not calling their contacts that are still in the government and saying, you got to get rid of the proof that we did these things.
I think you're right, Bruce. And, of course, the reason we know Peter Strzok was a liar because his texts were revealed, his plot to take down the president with his lover. So they were both on Lisa Page. Piece of Lisa Page. They were both on that the task force that was tasked with actually doing something significant. But there are two ways that these nominees can be stopped. We've talked about Matt today. But that is through background checks, and then it's also through the process in the Senate. Now, I'm going to address both of those briefly before we leave, because this is so important, okay? So the thing of it is, there's a whistleblower now, and Bruce knows about FBI background checks. They can be very tough, and because he's had to have one every year, didn't you, honey?
Yes.
Yeah, every year. They had to know everything about me, everything I did. Both of us were under scrutiny, and that used to be a good thing. But now let me tell you what's happening. There's an official at FBI headquarters in Washington, a whistleblower, who is warning that the Bureau's Security Clearance Division is politicized and cannot be trusted to screen President-elect Donald Trump's nominees for top administration jobs. He says that the security clearance process has been contaminated by the political agendas of security division officials and other executives in the FBI. And one last phrase from this, FBI SecDef has been politicized, and both Director Christopher Wray and Deputy Director Paul Abbott, or Abate, have the ability to examine the background investigations of anyone who is having a security clearance done.
And let me tell you, the other reason that Matt Gaetz is being so opposed is that he has said, I am going to get to the root of the problems of the FBI. And unfortunately, I have to break this news to the listeners that the problem with the FBI does not just lie on the seventh floor, as they refer to it, as the executive offices of the director of the FBI. It is way down in the DNA. And I can tell you this from experience because I was a polygraph examiner for much of my career with the FBI, and I had to do the security polygraphs for someone to receive a security clearance because that's required if you're going to come aboard for us. So I would spend, say, 3 hours at a time with these applicants before I polygraphed them, going through their background. And I have to tell you that after Obama became president, the standards were lowered. And I would polygraph these people. I'd go through their background, and I would just shake my head. Without giving details, I would just come home to Sandy and say, you know what, Sandy, I polygraphed someone today for employment, and I have no idea why we're even talking to this person. They have criminal convictions for drugs. They have drug use. They have not a bad work experience. They have...
qualifications, the high qualifications that used to be required.
I mean, I'm not saying they're bad people, but they were not of the quality, the caliber that we were looking for. So that's 15 years ago. So fast forward now 15 years, and you see how many of these people have been let into the FBI, and they are now not just in the top ranks, they're all throughout the ranks. And I've actually met several agents that have not a lot of time on. And I have to tell you, I was less than impressed by many of them.
So, well, I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about that a lot more, honey, as things. But now, the bottom line is what I didn't say. President Trump is not going to use the FBI and the normal security clearance process. And so, you know, that's going to cause a huge uproar. But Bruce would tell you that Barack Obama didn't do that either. He could not have passed the security clearance himself based on his background, and so his nominees didn't do that. So there is precedent for that, but they're going to come after him on that. And one last thing, President Trump has mentioned doing recess appointments. And what that means is when the Congress has recessed, certainly the Senate for sure, because they're the ones that are tasked by the Constitution with advice and consent, to advise and consent to the nominees of the president. They don't have the authority, but they are asked for their advice and for their consent. So if they refuse to recess, that's what they're talking about now. President, you heard me say, Mitch McConnell said in a meeting in Washington just a few days ago, there will be no recess, no recess appointments. Of course, he's the outgoing leader, but he's still wielding a ton of power over his Lieutenant John Thune. I'm sure of it. And so they don't plan to, I don't think, now, I know they're being very coy about it. Thune's being very coy about it. But I think I know where he stands on it. Just guessing. They're saying they're not going to cooperate with this. And that means President Trump's appointments can't get through. Well, here's the thing. Our friend, my friend, I believe he's a friend, Jeff Clark, is the one who the FBI raided his home and pulled him out on the driveway in his underwear one morning. He wasn't charged with any crime. And the cameras were there to take pictures and to humiliate him. He was one of the leaders at Justice, one of the assistant attorneys general, I can't remember his exact position, who really was trying to get to the bottom of what happened on the election day of 2020. So that's what they did to him. They humiliated him. They took away his law license in D.C. Well, he's done this whole piece that basically says the appointment power is vested in the president under the regime erected by the Article 2 of the Constitution. Two clauses in particular grant this power, the Appointments Clause and the Recess Appointments Clause, which basically means, I can't go into all this, but if Congress is not in session, he has the power to appoint anybody he wants. And so that's what they're aiming at. Now, this has never happened before, but it is constitutional, according to Jeff, in this, that if one branch of government will recess in cooperation and the other won't. The president has the power to shut down both. Now, isn't that interesting? So I won't get into the rest of that, but that's an article. It's called On the Article 2 Recess Appointments Clause. And again, that's written by Jeff Clark. And for those of you that are attorneys or want to know a little bit more about that, that you can read more about that explanation. So that is exactly where they're headed. I think you can take that to the bank. And that's so we may have a Attorney General Matt Gaetz, but it's going to be a bloody fight. And so, well, we're going to talk about Pete Hegseth next in the next podcast. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that. And I want to thank all of you for listening. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write me at sandy@afr.net. You can, you know, hear us on any social media platform, including afr.net, our home base. And you can go to sandyrios.com and listen. My Twitter handle is @sandyriostweet, and you can find me on other social media platforms. Well, I want to thank our sponsors, especially Timothy Plan, where you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Sandy Rios 24/7.